we still have times where we disagree, where we argue, that I think at times you feel alone, like you and your wife, you feel alone in what you're going through, that like no one else is walking through this. No one else is experiencing this. But that's such a lie. Like here, my sister is 6 months in walking through something, having to talk through something, compromise, ask for forgiveness. And Dan and I, 12 years in, are still doing that exact same thing, that it may look different because we're farther along in our relationship. And maybe it's a quicker conversation. Maybe, you know, we know now years down the road how to get through it, rather than maybe it taking a little bit longer when you're first getting married because you're working that out. But I think the biggest thing to remind yourself is you're not alone in it. Like everyone's walking through it. It just looks like a little different. It's a different season. But I feel like when you feel alone in your problems or the hardship that you're walking through, that's when you start to set in your mind that like, maybe this isn't it. Maybe there's a better marriage. Maybe there's a different spouse for me.
Hey, I'm Aaron.
And I'm Jennifer.
And we're the hosts of the Marriage After God podcast. Our desire is to help you cultivate a marriage that chases boldly after God's will for your life together.
We want to invite you to subscribe to our show wherever you watch or listen.
We are so glad you're here, and we pray that our discussion truly blesses you and your marriage.
Welcome to the Marriage After God podcast.
Welcome back to another episode of the Marriage After God podcast. I'm Aaron Smith, your host. Before we get started, I want to invite you, as always, hit that like button, hit that subscribe button. That way you don't miss a single episode or a single interview I get to have with all these awesome couples that will bless your marriage. Also, if you haven't already, please leave us a review. We love those reviews on our show. It helps other people find the show. It also blesses our hearts. Lastly, I want to invite you, if you haven't already, check out shop.marriageaftergod.com. This is one way you can support this podcast, is by supporting your marriage, picking up one of our prayer journals or our marriage devotionals to bless you and your marriage. It also supports this show. So that's shop.marriageaftergod.com. Pick up one of our books today. In today's episode on the Marriage After God podcast, we are joined by Dan and Samantha Matthews, authors of the new book, Always Choose Adventure. You might know them from their massive social media following on YouTube and Instagram, where they share their real, raw, and faith-filled family life through humor, adventure, and honesty. In today's episode, we talk about how they've built a marriage around risk and trust in God, about how their children have enhanced, not hindered, their journey, and how they've pushed back against the cultural narrative that sees kids as a burden. We also dive deep into their love for the local church, their story of living in RVs and tiny homes, and how they keep joy and laughter alive in their home. Please enjoy my conversation with Dan and Samantha Matthews. Dan and Sam, welcome to the Marriage After God podcast.
Thank you for having us.
Hey, we're super excited about this.
Yeah, I love doing this podcast because I get to meet so many awesome believers and just all the different stories, but there's always these lining up factors in their testimonies and their stories. And it's always around Jesus, and it's always around ministry. And it's exactly what Marriage After God is all about, is we're just trying to encourage marriages to realize that their marriage is their first ministry, and that their parenting, their children are their first, you know, disciples, and all these things. And you kind of incorporate that in your own marriage. And so I'm excited to meet you, and I'd love for you guys to introduce yourselves to my audience.
Yeah, definitely. So my name is Samantha.
I'm Dan.
And we've been married 11 years,
yeah,
going on 12, 11 and a half. We have two children. Canyon is 8, Ember 7, and we have one on the way. Live a very adventurous life. We share life online on every platform, and yeah, chase God, chase adventure.
That pretty much sums it up. Yeah. I mean, we've been doing that since we first got married. In fact, since we've been dating.
Yeah.
Just getting out and enjoying God's creation as much as we can. And then when we had our son, we were like, you know what? He takes a backseat to our relationship with God, and then our relationship with each other. And so a lot of people were like, oh, get ready. Your whole life is going to revolve around your kids and sporting activities and taking them to friends' house. And I was like, no, I don't think that's how we're going to do it. You know, it's going to be, they're part of our lives, mm-hmm, and we're going to raise them up in the way that we see fit as we follow God. And so from the time he was like 3 months old, we were hiking Long's Peak with him in a little baby carrier on the front, and he just joined up with everything that we were already doing. And so we've kind of tried to keep that model throughout our marriage.
Yeah.
I actually want to dig into that. This negative connotation that children have, and I wouldn't say children, that people have of children, in a second. But I actually want to go back. What was your guys's, you said ever since you guys got married, probably even in the dating season of your life, this adventure. My wife and I love adventure. We love going on road trips. We love going on, you know, visiting. We've been to nearly every state, not all of them, but most of them, especially with our kids. But what was that, your marriage story like? The adventure, how did that get incorporated into your marriage and kind of feed this ministry and life that you guys now have?
I think for Dan, it started early on. I mean, he had four other siblings and a brother, and they were always outside adventuring, shooting BB guns, bike riding through the neighborhood. And I grew up with a single mom. So our version of camping was loading everything in our car, our dog, the kennel, like every grocery item possible, and going to like a KOA or, you know, a cabin to stay. And that was my version. So when Dan and I met and started dating, he was the type where you put everything in your backpack or your hiking pack and you hike 3 miles into your site where you're going to set up your hammock and you sleep and you have to eat and wear what's on your back. And so it was a little bit of a learning lesson for me.
Right there.
Exactly.
For the first like four camping trips, I was carrying cans of food so that you could do foil packs. When we were in the backcountry, and I'm like, we got to lighten the load a little bit.
We've compromised a lot because we still do some of that sort of stuff, but just, you know, a little less weight that we have to carry around. But I've probably gone more towards his style of camping or style of adventuring and more rugged, I would say, and through our marriage. But we found out that that's one of the things that we enjoy together. Like, Dan's a hunter. And so he loves camping, hiking, hunting, fishing. As a single mom, it was just a campsite in KOA. That was my type of adventure, but I loved learning what he was interested in and doing it with him. So we started, you know, doing adventures together.
And we had a couple that mentored us before we got married. And one of the things that he said, the husband, he was like, if you can get through a long canoe trip together without like
tipping,
all communication breaking down, without you being at each other's throats, you're probably set up for marriage because canoeing with two people down a river can be quite strenuous to say the least. And so, yeah, we've just incorporated adventure all throughout our marriage, the relationships that we have with other people, and definitely with the family.
My wife and I, We were missionaries for about a year right after we got married. We went and spent 4 months in Africa, and we lived in a two-man tent with all of our stuff sitting outside the tent during the night while we're sleeping and then inside the tent while we were awake. And I always tell people, I'm like, you know, I feel like we got 7 years of struggles out of the way in those four months when you're living in a tent with your new spouse and you're like so close and dirty and smelly and hungry and all these things.
For sure. I feel like that's us kind of in a sense. We lived in our RV for a while, and we may get into that, but we were in close quarters, like 160 square feet, maybe 200 square feet, where you're near each other every place you go, even the bathroom, that like you have to get used to being with each other and living in those tight quarters and, you know, what you need, what you don't need.
It definitely brings you closer, both physically, proximity wise, and emotionally.
Yeah.
And I mean, that's been our lives all throughout, our marriage all throughout, is tiny homes, pulled behind camper living, RV living. And now we finally have a space that is big enough
where
we can actually be like farther apart, but we always find ourselves in the same room together.
Yeah.
So.
Well, what drew you guys together? I love people sharing their early marriage stories because it's so relatable to almost every single marriage. It's like, oh, I remember my early marriage story, but was there any struggles in the early on, or what drew you guys together and then what came out of that? And
yeah, Dan came to Missouri for Bible college, and he was actually in the same level of, I guess, master's commission in Bible college as my sister was. And then he had a younger brother that ended up coming down to finish his junior year of high school. And so we kind of all hung out together and loved his charisma, his wittiness, his humor, but also his love for the Lord. And I mean, I would say your relationship with the Lord, but also just like you were always so fun and like, I mean, adventurous too. That started like a 4 year, in a sense, dating journey for us. My mom wasn't too fond of the relationship at first. I think it was part of it was losing her youngest daughter, or, you know, quote, that me leaving and trusting my care into someone else's hands. And so for a while that was hard for her, but it grew us closer together. It grew us closer to the Lord, and realizing that we do want our relationship. We do enjoy each other's company. We do see, like, in the future what God has for us, and wanting to do that together. And so through Bible college, you coming down here and just...
Yeah, we met that way. And I mean, growing up around, or doing life around people, yeah. I mean, we had a pretty tight community at the church. She worked at the gym that I worked out at, which was mm-hmm. attached to the church. And so we were just always around each other. And so when you get to see somebody at like a youth camp or during youth service mm-hmm. or serving at the church, it's like, it didn't take very long for me to be like, okay, there's something there, you know? And we started talking mm-hmm. after I would work out every day. She would make me protein shakes. I spent way too much money on protein shakes. I probably went into debt just so that I could sit and talk to her for hours and hours.
It paid off.
And it ended up paying off. She did shoot me down a couple times, and then she came running back, but that's okay. But yeah, it was just seeing her love for the Lord, her love for serving. And she was just so happy and excited all the time. And so that's how things kind of kicked off. And then as soon as we got married, it was, I mean, 4 years of dating each other and really kind of doing life together that way.
Yeah.
Hey, friends. Aaron Smith here. Just wanted to take a moment and share with you something really special. You know, as parents, we're always looking for ways to encourage our kids' faith journey. Recently, I picked up some amazing highlighters and Bible resources from Mr. Penn as a gift for my daughter. She's been diving deeper into scripture and wanting to highlight her favorite verses and passages and wanting to jot down notes. She absolutely loves them, and they don't bleed through those thin Bible pages. Mr. Penn is all about equipping Christian families with top-notch Bible journaling kits, beautiful journaling Bibles, no-bleed pens and highlighters, Bible tabs, journals, and even school supplies for us parents. Started by Christian teachers in Louisiana, they've got over 100,000 five-star reviews on Amazon, which is amazing. I love how their products make studying God's Word fun and practical. And they even offer custom options for churches and conferences, plus a money-back guarantee if you're not thrilled. It's something I really love about them. Shop the best Bible journaling supplies on the market and fantastic gifts for the ladies in your life at MrPen.com. That's MRPEN.com. And guess what? Our audience gets a special discount. Use code MAG10, that's MAG10, at checkout and get 10% off your entire order. Check them out today.
It just kind of trickled into it.
Seeing in him growing up without a dad, I didn't have a good depiction of what a godly man was, or we had several fatherly figures in the church, like our youth pastor and several other men that were encouraging, would pray for my sister and I and would be in our lives when my father wasn't. But I didn't have anything to look at that I'm like, this is who I want to be the father of my children. This is what I want the father of my children to look like or to emulate. And in dating or in finding someone, that's what I was looking for, was who could be not only loving and caring for me and leading me in the right direction spiritually, but also love my children and have fun with them and like be helpful, because we have to like serve each other and, you know, we got to clean the house on hard days. Like I wanted that. And so you don't necessarily know in your dating, like everything that you're not going to see everything that you want to in the future, but you'll see the glimpses of that is like the great start to what a father will be one day. That's a great start to like what a future husband will be. And Dan had that. And I could just see in him the fun, his leadership spiritually, that like all of it was a good recipe for like what I wanted as my spouse.
Were you both raised in Christian homes? So
you were right.
Yeah, I definitely grew up in a more traditional, like small town AG home, you know, tattoos, you know, we're straight from the devil, you know, piercings, yeah. All of that. And so it was definitely a different look, at Christianity and the more rules and regulation side of it. I mean, it was getting saved every single Wednesday night at youth group. Like I got to rededicate. I did something wrong. Yeah. And it wasn't until I moved away from my home, came down, started really diving into the Word of God instead of just memorizing scripture mm-hmm. and like understanding what the text meant, that I feel like I found a real relationship with Jesus. Not that I didn't have one before, but I think that it was just kind of a skewed view of what Christianity is and what following Christ is like, where it became more of a relationship for me than a religion that I had to follow to a T.
Yeah. And mine more so, like, whenever I was born, my mom was addicted to every drug. My sister was feeding me through the crib and my parents weren't there. But until it was like late elementary, then my mom completely turned her life around. God freed her of every addiction and raised us up in church. And from that point on, we were like heavily involved in church. Like Dan said, I was working at church, volunteering at church, attending church. And that's where like my relationship with the Lord, was solidified in that area. So yeah, pretty much my whole life.
I love that. Well, Dan, what you were saying about, you know, you had a relationship with Christ, but it like transformed. It reminds me of what Paul says about growing in the knowledge of Christ, of our Savior.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like we have like this beginning stance of knowing him, and then we dig into the Word of God and we're like, oh, like, and our knowledge of him grows, and it really does. It's exactly how we deepen our faith and our in Christ is by knowing him more, just like he knows us. And so you were raised, Dan, in a Christian home, four brothers.
No. So I've got three older sisters and one younger brother.
Oh, I was way off.
Yeah.
You have four siblings.
Four siblings. Four siblings.
Yeah. You came from a decently larger family. And then, Sam, you came from just you and your sister.
Me and my sister, my mom. Yep. So just three girls.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. How are those dynamics? How did they like play into like you guys coming together, years, early years of your marriage? Because you guys have been married 12 years, you said?
Almost, yeah. January will be 12 years.
It's incredible. It's like way above average. And so congratulations.
Yeah, thank you. We've made it.
I mean, you got decades to go. But
yes, exactly.
The fact that you've gotten here, there's a lot of stuff that you guys have had to get through to get here.
Yeah.
How much of those dynamics do you feel have been played a part in either the struggles or the successes in your marriage?
Yeah.
I feel like for me, I was always very comfortable around women, not like in a ladies man or player type of way, but I had three older sisters and my mom was in the house all the time. My dad drove truck over the road. And so I kind of got the masculinity side from like him being gone and me and my brother wanting to prove ourselves when he got back, like, look at how far I can kick a football or throw a baseball now, or I can shoot my BB gun all the way across the yard or whatever. And so my brother and I became very, very competitive and very traditionally masculine, if you will, making sure our sisters are taken care of, even though they were all older than us. We were the little brothers that were protective. When a guy came to date them, it was like, dude, you better not hurt my sister. And they're like, okay, little buddy. And I'm like, dude, I've got golf clubs and a baseball bat. Okay. You know, like, I'll mess you up. Plus my dad's coming home this weekend, so you better watch out. And so I had always been very comfortable around women, very protective of women. Mm-hmm. And I think for Sam, her growing up in a house full of women, it was just like she saw the emotion and the comfort and the caring and nurturing side of things. But then it wasn't really until we got married, and then especially when we had a son, that she's like, whoa, boys are really different. This is totally different than how we grew up.
Yeah. And, you know, not having a dad, my mom did an amazing job raising us. You know, turning her life around was literally like 180 night and day difference. And she did an amazing job as both a mother and a father, if you will, you know, providing for us and setting the example of, you know, not only a woman of God, but trying to teach us still respect for my dad, despite, you know, their divorce and what to look for in somebody and what to, you know, look for in a marriage. And so I'm thankful for that. And then, like I said, looking at other people in our lives who played that fatherly figure role, but also had these strong marriages of 20 years, of 30 years, where I could look at them and be like, that's what I want in, you know, a spouse, but also a marriage. And although my mom gave great advice and encouragement, she didn't have that marriage advice to give. And so really looking at other people that we looked up to, and Dan and I still talk about it to this day, like the couples that we were mentored by are still together. There's like three that we can point out that we're thankful to have been guided by them, by be encouraged by them and be prayed for by them, because that's what we want long term. And so I think we both kind of looked at what we grew up with, what we had as an example, but also just what we wanted for ourselves and what we were, you know, wanted to be for, and didn't sway from that and didn't let any hardship kind of come between it.
Well, and I think we both learned from successes and failures in the relationships we've seen, because all three of my sisters had gotten married and I watched some of the marriages fail and one of them succeed. And the common denominator, it just seems like, is when God is at the center of it.
Yeah.
And, you know, some of my sisters don't live for the Lord and they don't have an intimate relationship with Jesus or follow his teachings. And then I've got a sister who really does. And it's not that Christians don't get divorced, but like we said from the very beginning, divorce is not in our vocabulary. Mm-hmm. Like we will do everything that we can to stay together forever. This isn't a vow just between two humans. It's a vow with the Lord. Like, this is my partner. This is who you've entrusted me with. This is who I'm going to put first in my life and who I'm going to serve for the rest of my life. And so at the very beginning, we said that. I mean, I remember that in counseling sessions with other people, even in talking with your mom, that was one of the things before we got married. And once everything had kind of fizzled out and she was like, hey, you can, like, you have my blessing now and you can marry my daughter. She's like, just promise me divorce is never an option. Mm-hmm. And I promised her that, and I will keep that promise forever. And so that's really, not that we're constantly thinking like, hey, we can't get divorced. We can't get divorced, but it's like,
no, but it's in the hard times. They're like, oh, wait,
it's like this, it's till death do us part. That's it. Like, that is the only time that we're going to be apart. And so, we've just put that in our lives. We make sure the kids know that. We make sure the kids know our priorities. We talk to them all the time.
Yeah.
And I'll ask them, I'm like, who does dad love most?
Jesus.
And one of them's like, Jesus. And the other one's like, God. And I go, okay, both right. And then I go, who next? And they're like, mom. And then I go, who next? And they're like, me. No, me.
Both,
I'm like, both of you guys, you know, and soon another little one. Like, I'm going to love you guys. But that's our priority list. And everything comes after those three.
Yeah.
And we've said that, and we'll continue to say that and live by it. And so we want them to know that from a very early stage, because that's one of the things that, like, I knew that my parents loved each other, but in my mind, like, we were their priority. Mm-hmm. And my dad worked a lot. My mom started picking up jobs on the side, and they ended up divorcing after all the kids were out of the house. And seeing that, and I'm like, I try to dissect things and like, where did it go wrong? What happened? And I know that couples can have issues without their kids even knowing about it. But I go, what was the breakdown? Was it that we were a priority? Were their priorities out of order? Were they idolizing work and making a living and being better off financially? Or were they idolizing making sure I'm a good mom or making sure I'm a good dad over a follower of Jesus and a husband or a wife?
Mm-hmm.
What you guys are saying is, for my listeners, I just want to encourage you, like, that promise, that covenant, like, which the Bible would call, like, this idea of marriage, it comes from the same story of, you know, salvation, you know, the God works, that God made this plan of salvation, and it's set in stone. Like, what Christ did is permanent, and it's for everyone who believe.
Yeah.
And that promise is not devoid. It's not voided out by our lack of, you know, what we can bring to the table. And we get to have a little bit of that picture in marriage, that even when it's hard, even when it's uncomfortable, even when it sucks, you can look back on something that's outside of you, that promise that you made to each other it's separate from the current situation, from the moment of difficulty.
Yeah.
And you say, well, we made that promise. And I think that's something that we forget sometimes. The royal we of realizing that we can still look to that promise we made.
Yeah.
And believe in that, even in the midst of these things that feel like, oh, this is not working.
Oh yeah. Cause yeah, even 11 years in with us, it's like it was like 6 months. We did a follow up with our officiant, our mentor, and he was like, all right, so how is it? And I'm like, Dan's like, I think he said nine.
He goes, what are you guys at with marriage on a scale of 1 to 10? And I'm like, man, I feel like I'm probably at a 9.
And I was like, a 6.
Oh, yeah.
And I was like, whoa, that's quite a ways off, you know? And he said, it's pretty common.
Yeah.
Like guys and girls, they just, view things differently, or in my mind, it's like I'm providing. And that was one of the things that I had to learn early on, is that my idea of providing is I bring money home, I pay the bills, I take care of things, I fix the lawnmower, you know, whatever. And her idea of it is like, well, yeah, we need money to survive, but also like you need to provide for me emotionally. And you need to be here on my hard days, and you need to be by my side and not just like, I made the money, so everything's good. It's like, no, there's a lot more provision. In fact, the financial side of it is probably the least important as far as a marriage goes, because it's like, if she doesn't feel loved, if I don't feel loved, or if I don't feel respected, no amount of money is going to fix that.
Yeah.
And I had to learn that the hard way, because when I heard six come out of her mouth, I was like, "What did I do something? Like, what happened? Yeah. I thought things were going great."
And yeah.
Then, you know, he kind of broke it down for us, and he helped us walk through that and understand like what my role is as a man, not just provider, not just protector. It goes way beyond that.
Yeah. But in those times of us like maybe disagreeing, or where we're at and, you know, where we feel in our relationship, or maybe we're going through a hard season with the kids or hard season financially, and, you know, you don't feel like you're as strong as you were, to not ever, like you said, the divorce isn't on the table, to not ever see that as an option. You literally, your only option is to talk it out, to pray it out, to work it out, and to vow together that we're going to do this, we're going to make it through. And I think that's the hard thing about some relationships. We have people that message us and, you know, say like, thanks for setting a good example. I wish my husband was more apt to, you know, want to make things work or whatever. And it's hard when one party is not, but I'm very thankful that like Dan and I both are at the place that like, even if I'm going through something, it's like he's there fighting for it, even when I'm my weakest, or when I'm like, when he's weak, like I'm there to keep him strong. I heard one stat, I can't remember, I think it was on a podcast, where someone was like, it's not just like a 50-50 thing. There's times where I'm like, all I have to give energy wise, or, you know, pregnancy's taken out of me, I have like 20% to give. Well, Dan is like giving that 80% to keep us where we're at, or he has to go above and beyond, where, you know, whether it's a hard, like I said, financially, sickness, children, or you see that the grass looks greener on the other side. It's not. It's just a matter of working together to make it work, and that being your only option.
I was just having a conversation with my wife, because, you know, periodically we still have really, you know, hard moments with each other.
Yeah, same.
We've been married, you know, 18 years, 19 years this next January, so 18 and a half years. Which, when I say that, doesn't make any sense, because I don't feel like it's been that long.
Yeah.
Which is, it's just so crazy that we're only almost 2 decades married. And she's like, you know, I feel like we should be past these things. And, you know, we've been married almost 20 years. Like, what? And I'm like, well, like, you're right. Maybe we should. There's like definitely some things that we probably should be better at by now. But I was like, we in general are way better. Like, where we at today is much more healthy than we were, where we were originally when we first got married, and the first 4.5 years of our marriage, which was the hardest season of our marriage. But something that we forget often through over the years is we think like, but like my wife said, like we should be not like we shouldn't be dealing with this anymore. I'm like, well, like we're going to have seasons. There's going to be like, things are going to come up, you know, deaths and hardships and sickness and all of the unknowns of life that are going to bring up sin nature in us. They're going to our flesh is going to react in those moments in ways that we may have thought we've figured out. In those moments, we got to deal with it again. We got to deal with it in prayer, you know?
I think one of the biggest things is my sister just recently got married. She's older than me, but she just got married about 6 months ago. And I'll be like, okay, so how's marriage going? She's like, well, we're walking through this. And I'm like, we just walked through that last week. Like, you're not alone. And I think for listeners, or even like, you know, I try to remind my, like our followers on Facebook or followers on Instagram, they're like, hey, I love your guys' marriage. I try to remind people and show them and maybe not show them, but explain to them that like, we still have hard times. We still have times where we disagree, where we argue, that I think at times you feel alone, like you and your wife, you feel alone in what you're going through, that like no one else is walking through this. No one else is experiencing this, but that's such a lie. Like, here, my sister is 6 months in walking through something, having to talk through something, compromise, ask for forgiveness. And Dan and I, 12 years in, are still doing that exact same thing, that it may look different because we're farther along in our relationship. And maybe it's a quicker conversation. Maybe, you know, we know now, years down the road how to get through it, rather than maybe it taking a little bit longer when you're first getting married because you're working that out. But I think the biggest thing to remind yourself is you're not alone in it. Like, everyone's walking through it. It just looks like a little different. It's a different season. But I feel like when you feel alone in your problems or the hardship that you're walking through, that's when you start to set in your mind that, like, maybe this isn't it. Maybe there's a better marriage. Maybe there's a different spouse for me. And it's like, don't even start that thought process. Just know that, like, everyone's going through this. It's just a season. You know, you walk through it, you pray through it, and you get through it, and you'll be better for it on the other side.
And you would think after 11 years of marriage, she wouldn't have to remind me to shut my closet light off anymore, but it still happens.
Yeah.
And
I'm like, you don't have to remind me every 6 months.
Yeah. So, yeah. We make a joke out of it now. Like, we do.
It started out with her being like, babe, your closet light is on. And I could tell it was really affecting her. And I was like,
I was getting annoyed.
I was like, babe, if you look to your left a little bit, you'll notice that your closet light is also on. And so now we joke about it. Like, if I'm in our bedroom and she's out in the living room with the kids or doing something else, I'll just yell through the house, babe, your closet light's on, you know? And we've just had fun with it. What was actually a pain point that was really annoying her. Mm-hmm. Now it's just like, hey, guess what? It's just a closet light.
Yeah.
And I'm going to do my best to shut it off. But
it's not eternal.
We all forget about it, or like something major comes up. Our kid is screaming. Our dog breaks the mirror in the front room. And it's like, the closet light got left on a little too long. Sorry, but I had to clean this mess up.
Or like, he folds the towels wrong. He folds them like hamburger style, and I prefer like hot dog style. But guess what? I don't do the laundry. So why am I going to sit here and complain about how he folds them when they're clean? Like, who cares how they look in the cabinet? They're done.
Yeah, we've learned to just not keep score. Like, everything that was an issue at one point, we've turned into humor that we actually connect over and have fun with each other over. And it was just our style of communication. It was like, she would hold it in for a while until it was a big deal. And now it's like, she just tells me right away, like, hey, just a heads up, I don't like this. Or, hey, you shouldn't have done this. She doesn't like when I shave fully because I look like I'm 12. And I didn't realize that. Or she's coming around to the dad bod. She doesn't want me to be super skinny anymore. And I'm like, hey, that works for me.
So do you think like maybe we can like work out together? Like, I think being comfortable with your spouse and like being able to have those conversations that are, you know, maybe deep and hard, but also can be fun and lighthearted. Some of my friends are like, wait, how does Dan feel about like you pointing out like his belly or whatever? I'm like, oh, like he's cool. Like, he's totally fine. I'm like, we like joke about it now that it's funny. We enjoy it. But I think, you know, not taking things too seriously or kind of making lighthearted about it, like making it lighthearted. But also whenever there is something that's like really bothering me, that taking a moment to have a conversation, be like, hey, you know, all jokes aside, you've been doing this and it's making me feel a certain way, not him like invalidating what I'm saying, but like listening and hearing me out, and then us kind of working together how we can fix that, or vice versa. You know, if I've been doing something, I'm like, you can always come to me in like in a gracious, calm way. Hey, babe. But when you're like, oh my gosh, you keep leaving this light on, or you keep doing this. Yeah. If you're going to be aggressive, then I'm going to want to be aggressive. But if you just come to each other calmly and you're like, hey, this is something I've noticed, maybe we can work on it, everyone's calm and it keeps the peace.
Well, and I think analyzing the intention behind something that she says, if I get offended by something she says, I have to take a step back and just go, is she trying to be mean to me? Is she trying to be rude or malicious? And I go, no, she's not. She's trying to help me understand what she needs from me, or understand that if I drink 15 Monster energy drinks a day, like the kids aren't going to have a dad. I'm going to have a heart attack. Like, maybe I shouldn't drink so many. And so I have to think about the intention behind it. And then it diffuses things pretty quickly.
Well, I think the key point you're making, and it's something that it's like a lifelong practice just for believers in general. You know, what is the definition of love? You know, it's one of them is love is not irritable, or another translation is easily
angered.
Angered. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So like, are we irritable? Are we easily offended? Yeah. You know, and that when we're easily offended, we're not walking in love. Yeah. And it's such a hard practice to not be easily offended by things.
Yes.
But your guys' solution to that is make it a little bit more humorous. Enjoy it. I have a solution for your closet light thing. Put one of those auto switches. When the door opens, it turns on. And when you shut it,
that would actually be really great.
That would really work if you shut your closet door.
Oh, that's true.
Put an auto door shut on her door.
Everything. Yeah. As long as there's no motion.
Yeah.
Mine actually don't really latch. So even sometimes when I shut them, they still kind of prop open. That's my
favorite. Yeah. We joke about it all the time. And people come over and like our friends or neighbors will be in our house. And then they just hear me yell through the house. And they're like, what was that all about? Yeah. We have to explain it to them. Like, we have fun with this. This is how we deal with things. Like, if it was actually a major issue, that's the thing. We realized it wasn't a big deal.
No.
And
it was at first, though. Like, it really bothered me where, like, it was probably a week straight where every day I realized that it was on and I was, like, getting frustrated. And then immediately he pointed out and I was like, yeah, my fault. But there'll be times where I'm, like, cooking dinner or I think one time I was crying over something and then you're like, oh, it's okay, babe, whatever. And then you're like, also, you left your light on. Where it is, yeah, it's just fun. Or like, hey, thanks so much for cooking dinner. Also, your light's on.
Yeah.
So.
Reminds me of one of my, social media is a huge thing. Like my wife and I, we have social media accounts. You guys have massive followings. But one of my favorite things about social media these days is how much marriage talk there is about the realities of these things and how common they are.
Yeah.
And one of the ones I love the most is like, the wife's walking in and she's like, you know, my husband, I just can't believe it. Look what he did. He always, and there's like a toothbrush and there's some toothpaste on the sink. Like,
and then you look over.
Giving it out and she pans over and all of her makeup is all over the counter. And then like it quickly takes away from that.
Yeah.
And like, you know, I really appreciate those things because it's shining a light on what you were just talking about. Someone I interviewed a while ago called it the uniqueness fallacy, where we think our situation's unique. Like no one understands it.
That's good.
And it just shows how normal all of these things are in marriage and how it's not just Christian marriages that deal with it, but every marriage literally has these exact same conversations every day. It does make you feel good that it's like,
makes you feel less alone and you're like, okay, we're normal.
And that's what I built my whole social media channel off of. It's hunting related content within a marriage. So it's like, I bought this, which is really expensive, or I'm leaving on a hunting trip again. And I realized that all the golf channels involving marriage have the same exact thing. All the gaming, all the fantasy football or the kids sports. It's like we all deal with very similar things. It might just be a different venue that you're dealing with it in. And so when we realize that it's so relatable to people, people are like, oh my gosh, that's my husband 100%. Or we just did one the other day and it was like me washing off the boat my wife got me for Father's Day. And I'm just spraying the hose at nothing. And all these guys are like, dude, that's the same model my wife got me. And then some of the women are like, oh, it's the same color as the car that you bought her for her birthday. And I'm like, it's just funny because when people can find the fun in the pain points, it makes them less painful.
Yeah.
Yeah. What's so okay. You just mentioned the boat. Your wife got you the boat.
The boat.
Yeah. The boat. My wife is lately, she. Like this super nice truck will drive by with this super brand new boat. And she's like, see, babe, see, look at that boat right there. My wife, if she could, would do that. She would literally buy it. And I'm like, nah, I don't know if I want a boat. So
really funny. She wants the boat.
Oh my gosh. She would die if I got her a boat. let's talk about adventures. You guys wrote a book about adventuring. My family loves adventuring. We did a when we were building this house we're in now, we did a 6-week road trip around the country. Just got in the van and just drove and stayed in Airbnbs and went to national parks and love it. And we do those sorts of things as much as we possibly can. And we've been doing it. I mean, we have 6 kids now. We just had our 6th about 10 months ago.
That's awesome. She's
almost 10 months old. But we've been doing it since before, like we said, we did missions work right when we got married. But all we ever heard early on from believers and unbelievers alike, oh, good thing you got all your traveling out of the way now, because once you have kids, it's not going to happen. Or, you know, get all your sleep in you can now. Like, only negative. I know they're saying it like they're probably not meaning it to be negative. They're not meaning to have an ill intention in those comments. But it's kind of the standard these days to have these negative conversations, this negative talk about children. Yeah. And I'm just 100% anti that. Yeah. I think the only comments that should come out of our mouths, outside of like actual truth conversations with people and their families and kids and all that. When you're just having a bypass and you're in, it should be encouragement.
Yeah.
It sounds like you guys had very similar, you loved adventure before kids.
Yep.
Then you got pregnant.
Yeah.
You guys had that. How did you guys combat that negative? Or did you even feel that way? Were you afraid?
Oh, yeah, we got that for sure.
I had a boss and she was absolutely hilarious. And I always joked that she was the female Michael Scott from the office. And it was so funny because one day I was in there talking to her and she's like, she was dealing with some stuff with her kids. And she's like, it just takes one bad friend. Like, it's so difficult raising kids. You have one bad friend and then your kid starts making poor choices and this and that. And I went into her office and she was like telling me all this stuff, but I went in there to tell her that Sam and I were pregnant with our first. And as soon as those words came out of my mouth, she's like, I mean, kids are the biggest blessing. Like, they are so great. And I was like, it's so funny because I would get those comments all the time. Your life's going to change. Oh, say goodbye to your hunting trips. Mm-hmm. Say goodbye to all your travel plans. Say goodbye to basically all freedom together.
Yeah.
And I was like, I'm like, that's not going to be our story. I don't want to resent my kids because I can't do the things that I wanted to do. How about I just help them find a passion in some of these things? Or they tag along with me, or they find something that they're passionate about and I encourage them in that and help them be the best version of themselves they can be. And so that's been the story for us the whole time. It's kids are a blessing no matter what. We thought we were done up until six months ago, maybe. It was like we were done after we had our son and our daughter. We felt great. Sam did two surrogacy journeys where she helped other families create their families. And we were like, we're good for 7 years. We said we were good. Mm-hmm. And she was scheduled to get her tubes tied. And the night before I came in, she was crying and she's just like, I'm scared about tomorrow. And I said, I actually don't feel at peace about you doing this. I'm not saying that I want more kids, but like taking that option away seems kind of crazy. Mm-hmm. And all she heard was, I want another baby. And so that led to us having another baby. But I'm like, I will never be the guy who finds out she's pregnant. And I'm like, oh my gosh, not again. You know, I've heard that so many times from people. And I'm like, children are a blessing. Mm-hmm. And I will forever be excited. If she comes to me 5 years from now and she's like, I'm pregnant, I might be like,
okay, here we go.
We weren't planning that, but awesome. Like, I'm super pumped. I'm excited to find out what it is, you know? And so we've always been that way. And again, we said our kids are going to go on these adventures with us. Our kids have no idea what normal life is. Like, they go to school, but they miss a lot of school.
We missed, I don't know how many letters I got of absent warnings. Like, hey, you're at 88%. Hey, you're at 83%. Hey, we're going to have to. And I'm like, you know what? Like, if it gets to the point where they're missing too much, then we'll pull them out and homeschool. Like, we're not going to stop our life and stop our family time, making memories, adventuring for the sake of public school. We prioritize learning, but we also prioritize family time and that time together. And I think with adventuring with kids, then what steers people away is it takes a little bit extra work. It's more packing. You do have, Dan read something to me the other day about paying thousands of dollars for your kids to complain in a different state. And it's like, that does happen. There are times where kids, like, we just went to Disney World for the first time. And let me tell you, that was a lot of money for 5 meltdowns before 10 a.m. Like, it was a lot. But looking back, my daughter did the Bippity Boppity Boutique and she looked so cute and had so much fun. And they are still talking about that and wanting to look at pictures and remember, and like remembering that time. And our 6 months in an RV, you know, it was a lot. We homeschooled the kids and we had to figure out nap time and how that life worked, but they still talk about it. And we look back and that was the most fun that we had as a family, the most memories we've made. And we just tell ourselves, like, we're never going to look back and be like, man, we wish we would have stayed home more. Oh, we wish we would have worked more. It's like, no, we wish we would have traveled more. We wish we would have gone to these other places and checked out other states. That I think that we can find ourselves getting comfortable in, I don't want to deal with the meltdowns or the tantrums. Oh, I don't want to have to pack all this junk and the car get messy. And it's like, how about you look at it in like, in a good way, in a good light. And like, you know what? It is a little bit more packing, but that's okay. We're going to be more prepared. And if one trip fails, the next trip's going to be better because we're going to know what worked, what didn't work. And I think that just the comfort of it and not wanting to go through the meltdowns and stuff kind of steers people away. But we just say like, embrace it and just like go head on into it.
Well, and realizing that everything that your kids go through is a learning opportunity for them.
Yeah,
and the way that you respond to something that they do wrong or do right is how they're going to understand how to deal with conflict or reward in their own life down the road.
Yeah.
And so we've been dealing with that with the kids in communication with each other and communication with their friends in responding to us. And then on the adventure side of things, like turning everything into an adventure. And that's what a lot of the book is. We want people in all different stages of an adventurous life to learn that there is adventure to be had. If you're someone who stays inside and watches Netflix every night, like you don't go on trips, you don't do this. There's plenty of things that you can do that are adventurous. They might not be adventurous for us, but for you, like go try a new restaurant, go do this. For the kids lately, one of their favorite things to do, one of the neighbors, they've got a white rabbit that got loose. Well, it loves nature and they're like, it's way more happy outside than it was as a pet.
Yeah.
So now it's just a wild rabbit. The kids every day, probably 2 to 3 hours a day, are trying to catch this white rabbit. And that's like the biggest adventure for them. They're setting up like umbrellas. They're putting food in the umbrella and they're like, it's going to jump in there and then we're going to scoop it up. And I'm like, this is what they're going to remember. Yeah. They tell everyone they encounter about this rabbit. And so it's like, yeah, they've done the national parks things. They've got their junior ranger badges. But at the end of the day, we want them to also live an adventurous life, to step out of their comfort zones, to try new foods, to try new things, to jump off a diving board instead of just walking in on the stairs. You know, there's so many growing moments and learning lessons that can be taught along the way for our kids. And so we try to view it in that light instead of like, we could be doing this instead, you know.
What was the, so you guys have done a lot of travel, a lot of RVing, all those sorts of things. What was the catalyst for this stuff? Like, were you doing this like when you were dating, like too, like just all the adventures, or was it post-marriage and you're like, hey, we want to go do something fun. And then it just turned into like a lifestyle. What was the catalyst for all
I think it turned into a lifestyle. And we found ourselves early on in marriage. We got married and about the 2 year mark, we had like a life change. Like he had a big job change. We moved and it kind of like changed the trajectory of our life and to where in a sense, adventure was more of a focus. And then 2 years later, something else happened and we moved to Colorado and we, whenever he had a change with work, we always wanted to go move to Colorado, but we were scared or never financially made sense, but we decided to move. And then again, 2 years later, we found ourselves moving back. So it was kind of this like 2 year streak of what change is coming. And a lot of it was job change. And at first it's scary because it's, you know, financially the job hardship and moving and handling all the change. But then we found ourselves like being really excited for the change and not knowing what was next. And also like the adventure that lies ahead, because at that point, then our hands are open. Like it's in God's hands to direct us, to take us somewhere new, to try something new. And we ended up looking forward to it. The RV life kind of came, it was always something that I wanted to do when we lived in Colorado. We had no money. Like we took a pay cut to go there. Cost of living is so high. We had no family, no friends out there. One income. We found out we were pregnant with our second child and we were living off of nothing and we couldn't like adventure because we had no money to. We could do stuff on the weekends, but I was scrolling Instagram at the time, and this was in 2017, 2018. And I saw people, kind of skipped over the bus, but I saw people living in RVs and I'm like, I want to live in an RV. Well, the cost to live in an RV at like a campsite long-term was about the same price as low income housing. So it didn't really make sense, but I had this desire and kind of talked it through with Dan and it was kind of like, you know, put it on the back burner for later. But then we ended up getting an RV, renovating it, renting it out as an Airbnb. But when we moved back to to Missouri, we were like, let's just live in it. We have it. It's here. Like, let's just live in it. And then after living in it for a few months, we enjoyed it. And so it's kind of like sometimes things fall into like our lap, but then sometimes it was like through a season of change, it gave us the option to RV or to try adventure. And it was like intriguing.
And I think one of the, I think for me, there were two pretty big catalysts when it came to the RV side of things and just letting go of the normal 9-to-5, mm-hmm. doing our own thing. One of them, when we lived in Colorado, we had a great mentor who ended up being her boss down the road. But he was talking about parenting and like with his kids. His kids were all kind of in that transition from like high school to college or like to young adult life. And he said, I always encourage my kids when there's multiple options, choose the most adventurous one.
Yeah.
And I was like, huh, that's really interesting. I've never thought about that. For me, it was like, can I make money? Can I provide for my family? Is this a safe bet? And we talked about it as soon as we left his house that night. Mm-hmm. And I was like, man, that's a really cool thing. And we found ourselves multiple times where there were different doors open and we didn't have clear direction from the Lord, which direction to go.
We had peace on.
And so we were like, what if we just do the most adventurous one? And at that point it was, I had two job offers in Colorado. One job offer in Colorado, one back here in Missouri. I was working at this company that I could have stayed very easily at. And we had an RV at that point mm-hmm. that we were, had gotten done renovating. And she was like, what if we could live wherever, but what if we live in the RV? Mm-hmm. And I was like, okay, let's choose the most adventurous one. And that ended up being moving back to Missouri, living out of this camper. And sometimes we'd live in somebody's backfield who had power hookups and septic hookups. Other times it was living at a campground or living in my buddy's back lot behind mm-hmm. his garage. And it just, that conversation with Kirk was a catalyst for us yeah. in choosing adventure. And then the other was once we had renovated that, lived in it, we started an RV renovation company. And so we were doing a lot of cosmetic interior okay. design stuff. And we made old, nasty, nursing home looking campers look really cool and updated, like a farmhouse or yeah. a new modern house on the inside. And we got invited to be on a TV competition show called Gutted, where we had 7 days to transform a Mercedes Sprinter van fully gutted into a working, livable vehicle road, that yeah. you could travel across the country in. And so we went out there.
I know exactly how that goes.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so yeah. We get out there and it was like our team was the van team. And then we had an RV team and then we had a school bus team. And so all three of us had 7 days to do it. And meeting the people out there, like we felt adventurous. 7 days. Yep. Yeah. Start to finish.
In the desert.
And so I mean, being competitive.
Yeah, it takes a lot. And we only knew RV life where you have plumbing and, you know, the structures there. You just do some paint and some cosmetic. Yeah, that's it. So with a van, you're starting from scratch. You're building the counters, building the bed, putting the composting toilet in, putting the diesel heater in, like
yeah.
cutting through the roof.
And it was wild. I mean, it was so cool, though, because all of these people that were competing had been in this space. Almost all of them had lived full time in their renovated van or school bus or whatever.
Or currently.
Here we are, like, we're doing 2 month long projects on people's campers and we're just changing out handles and doing new paint and trim and fixtures and things like that. And so we show up and it's these people who are like, oh, yeah, I spend my summers out in the desert or my winters out in the desert. And then I kind of bounce around. Maybe I live up north in the dead of winter or. And we're like, we were the lamest people out of everyone here. And seeing people do that, we're like, well, couldn't we do that?
Yeah.
And we had the conversation. It was like, yeah, but we have two kids now. Like, could you imagine traveling every single day and setting up and tearing down and doing the hookups? And it was like,
well, they're doing it. They have a family of like, six.
That actually sounds kind of fun. And so we ended up doing it for 6 months, just hitting the road. We told our friends when we left, we're like, we might be terrible at this and be back in 6 weeks, or you might not see us except for like 2 or 3 times over the next 2 years. We really have yeah. no idea. And we didn't have a plan.
Yeah.
It was like, we knew we had to pick up a dog in Montana at some point. We knew a couple places, but we'd find ourselves in the middle of Utah and Sam would go, you know what? I want to go to the Oregon coast. There's a place that I saw online. And I'm like, all right, that's our next stop. Where are we going tomorrow?
Yeah.
And so we like went up there and then it was like, we've never been to Glacier. Let's go to Glacier. Okay.
Over there.
So we'd go to Glacier. Hey, remember that place we stayed at a couple of years ago on the on the rim of the Badlands in South Dakota. Let's go stay there. And it's like, all right, let's go do that. The kids weren't with us. They would love to see it. And so that was just our life. We might drive until 2 a.m. and park in a truck stop and like make sure all the doors are locked, you know. But it was just fun. And the kids learned so much. Walmart parking lots are the scariest place on the planet when you know you're sleeping there for the night.
At least they have their lights on.
Yes, yeah. For real.
But that was it. It was seeing other people and going, why are we making excuses for why we can't do it? What is actually keeping us from being able to? It sounds like our attitude and our doubt is the only thing keeping us. And seeing God throughout the Bible, he's calling people to do amazing things, to do incredible things. I challenge people all the time. I'm like, I would love it if you could find me a verse where God just said, hey, you're going to spend your life comfortable staying right here. Yeah. Everything's good. You don't need to trust me. And I'm like, it's just not there. He wants us to live adventurous lives. And so we've taken that up. People are like, wait a minute, you just had a book come out about adventure and you just bought a house. I'm like, yeah, but the adventure doesn't have to stop because you have a house.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, you might have to pay someone to mow the lawn while you're gone.
Yeah.
Trust me, a backyard renovation is its own adventure and even more scary than some nights on the road.
Yeah.
We're still trying to get our backyard done, and now we're trying to work on our front yard. And it was literally dirt when we bought it. So it's like trying to look nice. And then trying to do it ourselves because it's so expensive to pay someone else.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I do a couple of last questions I have for you guys. And I'm sure this is something that you guys are constantly thinking about. So how old are your two kids?
7 and 8, almost 7 9. And 8,
and then you have one on the way.
Mm-hmm.
That's a pretty good gap. That was because of the surrogacies, I'm imagining, right?
Yes. Uh-huh.
The reality of all of the traveling, like you have a home now, how are you as a family keeping connected in the church, showing your children the value? Because you talked about how valuable the community you had, those mentors you had, was in your marriage, and even still now that you reach out to them and talk to them. How are you cultivating that in your home? Because it is hard to have close, tight fellowship. We're looking for people who have been blessed by this free podcast and our free daily marriage prayer emails and who want to help be a blessing to others. Creating and hosting this podcast and sending out our daily emails do incur a financial cost. And we want to invite you to join our faithful patron team to help financially support these resources so that they can remain free for all who need them. Please join our patron team today and become one of the faithful financial supporters who desires to help bless thousands of marriages around the world. Your support will help us pay for the creation, hosting, and promotion of our podcast and daily emails. Thank you, and we hope to see you become a Marriage After God patron. When you're traveling.
Yes.
Yeah.
How are you picking that up?
That was one of the things that caused us to stop traveling. I think we would have kept going because we loved it. The kids were having fun, but we were missing the aspect of community. And, you know, we would meet new people at each stop or each campsite, and the kids would, you know, find some kids to play with, but we didn't have that community. We had, you know, our time with the Lord and our time together, but we didn't have friends. And in moving back and settling down, that's caused us to be able to get involved in a church again and serve, and our kids to get involved in. In the past 2 years, both of them have gotten saved and have gotten baptized. And it's been amazing to witness as a parent their love and desire for the things of God and our community and our friendship are those that are involved in the church. And so, yes, prioritizing our time together and adventure and enjoying God's creation, but also serving the church and being a part of what God is doing and teaching them how to serve and how to love others and how to give back is really important, but it takes being strategic about it and not being flippant and just like going wherever and not having a good foundation of being connected in church.
And even when we do travel, like we go down to certain parts of Florida all the time, and there's churches now that we've gotten connected with down there. And it's like, when we're there, we're attending that church. If we go down and stay for the month, that's where we go to church for the month. And the kids know that. They're like, oh yeah. It might be 9 months in between going there. They're like, I remember this church. There's mangoes on the tree in the back. And we're like, yep, we're going to pick some fresh mangoes after we leave here. Yeah. But like when we're home, it's so important. And it's like we missed that church family so much. It felt really, really weird. And now we're very involved. Like, I'm on the board of trustees at the church. And I was like, I feel bad because I'm probably the only, or I'm probably the least attending board of trustee member ever. Because like
to call in or
we go on trips as a family, or I have trips planned in the fall for hunting and stuff. And I'm like, I'm not here, but I'm connected. Mm-hmm. Like, I talk to my pastor almost every day.
Yeah.
I talk to other people from the church. They're some of the people I'm closest with. In fact, all of our friends, we had a party here for the 4th of July. And I think out of what, 50, 60 people that were here, maybe four of them we have never attended church with.
Yeah.
Everybody else, the closest people in our lives, the people who continue to be in our lives, even when we're on the road, the ones that we're constantly mm-hmm. calling and talking to and encouraging, or that call us if there's an issue, or we call them if there's an issue. They're all people that we've done life with together within the church.
Yeah.
And so the kids see that, all of their closest friends, it's the same way for them. And it's just really cool to see how your church family becomes even closer than your actual family sometimes. Mm-hmm. Like my extended family or even my siblings, we live out of state. We don't talk all the time, but yeah. these people that I do life with together and I serve with, yeah. we're in constant communication and helping each other out however we can.
And I think that's got to be the key in these. I mean, because on one hand you could say like, oh, you should never, you know, go and be gone for long periods of time because you need to be so connected to your church, which I believe wholeheartedly that the Bible teaches us that we should be, it says, do not forsake the gathering of the brethren, that we should be in community, that's the point, is that we are the church together.
Yeah.
And walking in accountability and all of the things that it's like safety, right? Mm-hmm. But you still can, is like you said, if that intentionality is there, is like when we are home, we are home and we're with our community and we're connected. And when we're gone, they still have access to us and can reach out to us. And we go back and forth and we're communicating.
Yeah.
I've seen other families not see that as a necessity. Say, mm-hmm. oh no, like we have our relationship with God. We know God. We love God. We love the Bible, but we don't necessarily need, you know, a home base. We don't need a community. We can, you know, get a little bit over here, another bit over there. And I think that's dangerous. And it doesn't sound like you're doing that. It sounds like your heart, like we understand this. And so we're going to cultivate that. And enjoy the adventure and still show our children that we can be away and still there.
I
think that now it's just teaching them, they don't understand. Wait, they go to a different church. Like some of our close friends go to a different church than us when in the past we used to go to the same one. So they're like, wait, they go to church, but they're not with us. And we have to explain, yes, there's different kinds of churches, but
I feel like it's a new, it's probably not a new thing, but I'm hearing it more and more from people like, oh, this is my church. Like being out doing this with my buddies, that's my church. And it's like, well, no, that can be like your community, but you golfing and talking about Jesus with your buddies while you're golfing isn't church. It's different. And I don't know where it comes from. I don't know if it's just hurt people have been in church and something bad happened, or they were treated wrong or didn't feel like they were seen at church or whatever it is. But the whole phrase like, oh, I was hurt by the church. I'm like, man, you were hurt by people and people are sinful and that's going to happen. There's going to be somebody who hurts you in the future or offends you in the future. But to hold that against every body of believers and every gathering on a Sunday morning or a Saturday night or a Wednesday night, it's hard because I haven't felt that. Like I've been burnt out for sure. Like I've given everything to the church for years and years and I've been burnt out by it, but I can't hold that against God's house. You know, it's just missed expectations. I didn't think I'd be doing as much as I was, or I didn't realize how fatigued I got. And so, for people who see things going wrong in their life, they don't feel like they have community, they don't feel like they have X, Y, and Z. I'm like, are you attending church anywhere? Are you there? Are you building that community or serving somewhere? And I said the same thing to family members who were trying to find a husband. I'm like, are you dating people? are you trying or are you just doing your own thing? And it's like, well, no, I'm not really trying. And I'm like, get out there. Like, go to an adult singles thing at church. Yeah. And I bet you find a husband. There is nobody who wants a wife or a husband more than someone following Jesus who's single.
Yeah.
Because they're not doing all the things that they're not supposed to be doing. And they want that. Exactly. You know, like you should put yourself out there. And so I hear that a lot. People feel lonely or they don't feel like they have anybody else to talk to. And one of the first things is, do you have a church home?
How's your relationship with the Lord? Mm-hmm.
See if you feel welcome. So
we get comments all the time from people. I'm sure you guys get the same thing. Like, hey, I don't have anyone else to talk to. I can't talk to anyone at my church. So here's my question. You're like, well, you don't even know me. Like,
YouTube and whatnot,
but I'm not like there with you. I don't know your life. I think a lot of believers, many that struggle with this, struggle with getting connected, struggle with being known. It's specifically that there's a fear of being known. There's a fear of accountability. There's a fear of actually having change or be seen for who you are, your life choices, your way of living, your being judged. And that's a real thing.
Yeah.
That's hard. So I commend you guys for being able to learn adventure, grow in adventure and traveling and seeing the country and world. I don't know how far you've guys traveled, but showing your kids the ability to do that. But showing that community aspect, showing that fellowship with other believers cannot be like substituted. There is no for that. So that's amazing. I'd love to hear. So I don't know if we've said the name of your book. Share with my audience the name of your book, where to get it, and then where to find you guys online.
Yeah, definitely. So our book is called Always Choose Adventure, based off of that encouragement from a mentor about choosing the most adventurous route in life. And it's just our journey to chasing the things that matter most. And we share stories of our life and how through sacrifice and faith and trusting in God and putting fear aside, we had some of the most adventurous, most memorable moments of our life. We just share the good and the bad with you, some funny stories, some pictures. You can buy it at all major retailers. It's pre-order right now, but it's releasing August 26th. And we share our life online. Dan has hunting platforms where he shares hunting humor, the Nomadic Outdoorsman. And then ours is just We Are Dan and Sam on all platforms.
Amazing. Love you guys' story. I love what you guys are doing.
Yeah.
Encouraging people. And congratulations on the little baby you got coming
soon. Thanks so much. Thanks for having us.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah. God bless you guys.
You too.